Everyone, welcome back to another Lakers Outsiders podcast. I'm Jacob Rood. Gary, not joining us tonight. I believe something about potato harvesting. I don't know if it's that time of year or not. But we do have Hani back. Major upgrade, in my opinion. Hani, how was the rest mid or early in the season, and how are you feeling?
Really, I had to take a players only meeting by myself after my own start to tweet in the games, and then I think it worked out. You know, there was a little bit of a bumpy finish, but I got a win. I'm in the win column, and I'm feeling pretty good.
Is this your version of LeBron taking a like 2-week hiatus to Miami?
Yeah, or the missing version of it. It's Mike D'Antoni saying this is when the season starts for the 12th time.
Now I have some PTSD. The Lakers, as Hani mentioned, they got back in the win column tonight, but boy, it wasn't pretty. It was a weird game, up and down game. Looked like the Lakers were going to pull away late against the Mavericks. Everything's looking all rosy. A little over 4 minutes ago, I want to say they were up about 14 points. And I mean, there's a lot of things we could say happened. It seems like they might have shifted down into neutral, or I don't even know. We're going to talk about all of it. Before we get started, as always, if you guys want to or haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes. And as we've mentioned the last couple podcasts, we're keeping track this year of who. As Hani mentioned, he finally got a win tweeting tonight. We're keeping track of who has the best record tweeting. And the loser is going to have to do some type of forfeit, which we're taking suggestions from you guys in the leave an iTunes review. Let us know what you'd like to see the loser do. We're being very strategic this year, Gary and I. We're just letting Hani have most of the games. We're going for quality over quantity right now.
Honestly, that's not any different than what you guys did last year. But
exactly, and it worked. I believe we both had better records last year.
Absolutely not.
Nah. Those records are wiped out. I'm going to assume that you're lying. But yeah, if you guys give us some fun predictions or not predictions, but some fun forfeits to do in the rating and review section on iTunes. We'll take a look at those and hopefully use one that you guys have sent in. But back to tonight's game. As we always kind of do, we're going to start with a positive takeaway from tonight's game. Hani, what was your biggest positive takeaway tonight?
I think there's only one really true positive takeaway, and that's the starting lineup. So this is the second night that they've actually ran with this group, which was Lonzo, Kuzma, Ingram, LeBron, and JaVale. And it was really successful. They played them for about 23 minutes tonight, and they outscored the Mavericks by 20 points in those minutes. Every single one of those guys had a pretty good game. I think Ingram probably was the only one that struggled shooting. All the other ones shot over 50% from the field, shot over 50% from three, other than JaVale, who didn't attempt any. Every single one had a positive plus minus. It just seems like they're really gelling together. Their defense at times looked pretty good because of Lonzo and Ingram, especially in JaVale and in the back. So far that experiment has been working really well, which is interesting because of it being kind of a untraditional lineup in that Ingram is playing the two guard position, which is very much not his natural position. But he uses his length really well. If he's surrendering some foot speed to guards, he's making it up with his length. So that's been working out really well. And it's obviously it's against the Mavs. They're not a great team, but as we saw in the NBA, you never know how much of a nail biter any game against any team can be. So that lineup really save their butts for most of the game.
Yeah, that was like you said, that's the biggest positive. It was such a weird game because it seemed like the starters would come in, build up a big lead. The bench would kind of slowly integrate its way in, lose said lead, and then the starters would come in and do it all over again. Seemed like at least two or three times tonight, the starters came in, went on a big run, got the lead to double digits, they call a timeout, and then slowly start to chip away until it's back to a 2-3-4 point game. It was odd. Every starter for the Lakers had a positive plus minus. JaVale was the highest at plus 18. Lonzo was plus 15. Kuzma was 12. Ingram was 9. And LeBron was 5. But then every reserve had a negative plus minus. Rondo was a negative 21. Hart was a negative 13. KCP was a negative 10. I mean, it was just a rough night. I saw a couple people kind of suggest this after the game. Even with how good the starting lineup is right now, do you see the Lakers at all trying to maybe breaking up that lineup just to put something on the bench that they can rely upon?
It's really interesting because I'm not sure what you can do. The only one that makes sense, I think, is putting Kuzma on the bench, which is what I before Ingram came back from his suspension, that's what I thought was going to happen. I thought it was going to be Hart starting in place of Kuzma. And I could see that working as long as Jonathan Williams wasn't just a two-game superstar and can actually play some center. Or if Mo Wagner was active today, he didn't play. But if he comes back and is actually pretty decent, then I think it works. But if you're playing Kuzma off the bench with the intention of playing him as a backup center, then that's not going to do you any favors either. So I guess it kind of depends on how they would run their bench lineups, how they would stagger it. I think it's, to me, it's less about who starts and who's playing off the bench and more about how Luke staggers it. And some of the lineups he played tonight weren't very good, frankly. They just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think figuring out, and it's going to take him a while to do this as it makes sense, figuring out what players from the starting lineup he's going to sub out first, which ones can he bring in from the bench to put into that starting lineup and still fit in really well, which ones can kind of be the offensive hub or whatever off the bench. That's going to be a really big key in the first, like, I don't know, quarter of the season for him to figure out so that they can actually have a better rotation for the home stretch of the season.
Yeah, I'm not really – I didn't really want to overreact when the starting lineup was bad. But – so I don't really necessarily want to do the same kind of the opposite here and overreact because the bench is bad. But I don't know. Some of the struggles, I'm just not sure what the solution is. This is the first time Rondo's played bad and since really coming back from a suspension. So that feels a little more temporary, just more of like a dip in form tonight. But KCP hasn't looked good most of the season. I thought he played a little better tonight. And then Josh Hart, I mean, another one. I don't think he's going to stay this bad, basically, but he hasn't had the same impact since he was moved to the bench. And then Jonathan Williams, as fun as he was as a story when basically the Lakers found him, I think it's becoming obvious now, the more tape they get on him, that he's little more than a kind of energy guy. I don't think he can be your regular backup center.
Right.
Which I think the Lakers ideally hope that Mo Wagner is that soon. I know they kind of wanted him to hopefully get in tonight. I would expect him to see a little more time with the South Bay Lakers. It's just hard to integrate right now because the Lakers' next two games are the Blazers and the Raptors. And both of those are going to be tough games. After that, I know Gary and I talked about this, the schedule kind of dips a little bit. They should have a little time to possibly integrate them then. But I mean, the lineup we have, unless the Lakers are just going to kind of throw Mo Wagner into the fire, is the lineup we're going to have for the next couple games. So I still kind of have the same mindset where I think right now stability is more important than anything, especially with how well that starting lineup's playing. Just give it a couple games instead of changing everything. Just give it a couple games, see what trends are kind of appearing, and then you can make adjustments from there, I think, is probably the best approach that they can have, especially with how well that starting lineup is. I think that very easily could be your lineup in the bigger games. If not JaVale, if the Lakers want to go smaller than Josh Hart. But, yeah, I think right now you just kind of – more than anything I wrote about this, it's kind of a mixed bag of sorts with having all this depth, where on one hand it's great that you have so many guys that can contribute, but on the other hand, if the minute you're making a mistake, you're looking over to the bench to see if you're going to get pulled, then that's not – great for anybody's psyche. So I just think right now your best solution is to just leave it as is, let guys kind of work through some of their mistakes, and maybe the bench figures it out. Maybe Rondo gets a little more comfortable, the shooters start hitting some shots. And I really do think having Mo Wagner come in and providing more spacing will be big. So yeah, I wouldn't change anything right now. The one other thing I wrote down, which we talked about, Rondo looked very bad tonight, and Lonzo kind of returned to form. I mean, is there anything long-term to take away from that, you think, or anything alarming with how those two looked tonight in both extremes, really?
I mean, Lonzo for most of the year has been really good. So all I'm taking is that I'm just happy that he's playing really well. He definitely seemed more engaged. He shot the ball really well, which isn't always going to happen, but he at least shot it with confidence. The Rondo thing, I don't think he's always going to be this bad, especially offensively. Although I think sometimes some of the things he does on offense can be can hurt the team as a whole, just the way that he dominates the ball and his indecision on shooting and stuff like that. But he's not always going to be just such a giant negative offensively. Defensively, though, it is an issue, and it's going to be an issue for the whole year. He's not a good defender at this point in his career. The Lakers really sold him as one when they signed him, but he just hasn't been, you know, what the version of him that was a All-NBA defender as a Celtic just hasn't been the case for years now. And that's kind of the case with most of the guys off the bench. Like, Lance isn't a good defender. Jonathan Williams, I mean, he tries, which is saying a lot relative to some of the other bench guys, but he's not going to be a good defender. Josh Hart has been really disappointing defensively this year, especially on the perimeter. KCP the same. So I think that's kind of the bigger takeaway, is that the guys that they have off the bench are just not good defenders. And if they're going to make even above average defensive team, they're going to need either Hart and KCP to come back to form or something else, because they're just never going to be able to put up any consistent defense putting those guys into the rotation.
One last note on the kind of starters versus bench. Starting lineup for the Lakers tonight, played 23 minutes together and had an offensive rating of 119.6 and a defensive rating of 78.4. For a net rating of 41.2.
Yeah.
That's a lot to build on. Quite obvious takeaways. So I think we're both in agreement. Keep it as is. We spent a lot of time on that. We kind of thought we would. My positive takeaway, kind of in the same vein, I thought Lonzo and Brandon Ingram tonight defensively were just superb. Both really, I think, have a lot of pressure on them, because the Lakers' perimeter defense has been lackluster, to say the least. And both of them took turns guarding Luka Doncic tonight. I thought Ingram did a really good job on him. Lonzo, I know, was on Dennis Smith Jr. a fair amount. There was obviously with how the Lakers play, there was a lot of kind of switching and whatnot. But Doncic was 5 of 11. Dennis Smith Jr. was 2 of 9, so 7 of 20. If that's going to be the Lakers' backcourt, that is going to be a very good defensive backcourt. For some of the problems you have with kind of natural fit, whether Ingram can make threes, which the last two games he looks like he can. But for what you may lose offensively, you're going to gain defensively because I think that's the Lakers' two best perimeter defenders. And then you didn't even pay me to say this, but JaVale looked really good defensively as well. He led the team in defensive rating at 91. I guess what'd you just think? I know the defense has been often criticized and probably fairly so. What'd you think of the defense specifically from those three tonight?
Those three, I think, for most of the year have been really good. You know, Lonzo and Ingram have their struggles sometimes. Lonzo especially kind of gets lost off the ball or get caught ball watching. Ingram kind of the same thing. JaVale has limitations because they're never going to bring him up to basically just guard ball handlers on pick and rolls. He's always going to drop back, and that's going to be a little bit of an issue. And the Mavericks got a few different like floaters and stuff over him because he was dropping so far back on pick and rolls tonight. That's going to be an issue. Side note on that, by the way, JaVale played 35 minutes tonight. And if that seems like a lot, it's because it is. He hasn't played more than 30 minutes since February of 2013. So it's not something he typically does. And on one hand, it's really good that he was able to play so much because he's clearly their best center and one of their best players in general. And he's been really good all year. On the other hand, it kind of worries me that he's playing so much already, considering like just the physical limitations that he has in terms of playing so many minutes with his asthma and all that. So I don't know how that's being handled. I don't know what the trainers are doing, what Luke is doing, but I guess that's just something to keep an eye on. But yeah, having JaVale there as like a shot blocker, he had 5 blocks tonight. I think he might lead the league in blocks this season. I'd have to check, but I'm not sure. Having him, it has been so crucial considering how bad this team is guarding the perimeter, like you mentioned. He'll just erase a few mistakes a night, and that could be the difference in a game like this.
I might be speaking out of turn here, but I don't even think you expected this type of performance from JaVale this season. He's been unbelievable. It is interesting for those that missed it. I want to say it was the opening week of the season. JaVale had an article where he basically said, and we've mentioned it here, that this whole asthma, I guess maybe stigma is the word, it is a little overblown at times. Yeah. Which, I mean, we saw tonight, 35 minutes. If anything, the thing that holds him back most is his foul problems. He's not quite as disciplined as he should be, really. Bites for pump fakes a lot. But he's also playing as a starting center on a contending team, which is not something he's ever done before. So you kind of take the good with the bad right now and hope that he learns to stay out of foul trouble. But yeah, those three tonight, superb. They were three of the top five in defensive rating, and Kuzma was second on the team at 98.5. So if the Lakers are going to play defense like that, I know it's the Mavericks. I know Dallas has been bad. I know they're probably a top or bottom five team.
They missed a ton of open threes too. Like that's a pretty big thing we should mention.
Yes, absolutely. But still, you have to start somewhere. And this is a good starting point, especially going into two tough games. We're not, we Gary and I have been doing negative takeaways. We're not going to do one now because it's basically the same thing. Hani, what do you make of what happened in the fourth quarter?
Confusion. I have no idea. It's just, it's really confusing how they can go through these spurts. I mean, it made sense when it was the bench. It didn't really make sense when it was most of the starters in the last 4 minutes of the game not getting a single basket. And then both all Ingram, Kuzma, and LeBron all went 1-for-2 at the free throw line in the last, I think, minute of the game. So they definitely were playing. They were trying their best to lose that game. They got lucky because Wesley Matthews apparently did not know how many fouls the Mavs had to get, which was zero.
Great tanking move. As somebody, as a franchise who became very well versed in tanking, just an incredible tanking move.
They should put a wing in the Hall of Fame just for brilliant tanking maneuvers, and it should be called the Wesley Matthews wing of the Hall of Fame. But yeah, I think part of it is this gets harped on a lot, and I think it gets overblown for the record, but Lakers like half court offense isn't super great. They put up so many points that people are just automatically saying, hey, their offense is fine. Their offense is fine. So much of that comes through transition opportunities that we don't really get to see how good they are in the half court until we get to like the fourth quarter when the game slows down and they're playing possession-based basketball. And I don't think it's, you know, a coincidence that in pretty much every game other than the game against the Suns, they've struggled in the fourth quarter. They've been in every single game, but they've kind of lost them in the last couple minutes of the game. And I think that's part of that is just these are guys getting still getting acclimated to each other. There's a lot of relying on LeBron to go one-on-one and try to get something. They even relied on Brandon Ingram a few times to go one-on-one and get something. And pretty much none of those ever worked. Because when nobody's moving, there's five guys keyed in on the person with the ball. He gets to the rim, and there's however many limbs trying to block them, or they're settling for jumpers. So I think that's partially on the coaching staff. And Luke Walton gets a lot of crap from Lakers fans, and some of it is warranted, and I think in this case it is. And a lot of it is also on the players for just ball watching and not setting screens and not moving off the ball and all of that. I guess I'm happy that all of this is happening early in the year, and hopefully it's something that gets fixed because I think it's fixable. Like, I don't think this is going to be an issue that haunts them the entire season. But also, on the other hand, it's the Western Conference, and it's really hard to get into the playoffs, and they really need to get that fixed as soon as possible.
I said this after, I want to say, the Denver game, that there's still things that need to be fixed, but it's a lot more fun, and it's a lot easier to fix them after loss or after wins. Excuse me.
Yeah.
The offense for really the second night in a row, or second game in a row, just bogged down to a complete stop at the end of the game. It's one thing. You have LeBron. You want him to be the closer. He's really struggled at that this year. I think there'll be a progression to the mean at some point. But really, for most of the last 4 minutes, the Lakers went away from running any kind of sets or really getting any kind of ball movement and just went LeBron and Brandon Ingram just kind of went your turn, my turn, your turn, my turn on ISOs or high ball screens that got a switch and then trying to attack that player, like you said. That's not going to get it done for 4 minute stretches. That might get it done in the final minute with the game on the line. I still wouldn't be crazy about that, but that's certainly not going to get it done for a 4 minute stretch. And again, this wouldn't have been anywhere near as close. It may not have even been as tight of a ball game if they knock down free throws, which has been a problem for 2 years now. Kuzma, Ingram, and LeBron all split free throws in the final couple of minutes. The Lakers shot 18 of 24, which is above average for them. But if those guys, even if one of them hits a free throw, it's not even a tie game late. or yeah. the Mavs have to at least shoot a three-pointer instead of a Doncic runner late to try to tie the game, and that just kind of changes everything. Again, Gary and I said this before, it's a lot of the small things that are kind of adding up right now against them.
And it goes both ways, too. Like, their defense down the stretch wasn't very good either. They have breakdowns. They have overhelping. LeBron had the one where he helped off of Harrison Barnes for pretty much no reason, and he hit a corner three to tie, I think, to tie the game.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the full quote, but I think he did acknowledge it after the game. And, you know, it's LeBron, so you kind of live with that sort of stuff, but it's him and everybody else, and it's kind of just the habit of it. Whether they're not really communicating switches sometimes, they're overhelping and that sort of stuff, just late in games when there's a few possessions left, that stuff just kills you.
LeBron tonight, and really the last couple games, I guess, what are, I'll throw it to you first. What are your thoughts on his defense, and I guess particularly his defensive effort, to be quite frank?
I mean, I was expecting this the entire time. It's not good. Like, he just hasn't really been a defensive stalwart like he was early in his career for the past two or three seasons now. And I think you have to deal with that because he's still the best player in the world. And if he needs to take time off on defense so that he can, you know, just carry your offense on the other end, then you live with that. But part of the reasoning for what the Lakers did in free agency that got criticized ad nauseum was, hey, we're going to get ball handlers so LeBron doesn't have to have the ball in his hands as much, which means he doesn't get as tired on offense as much, which hopefully means he puts in more effort on defense. And that hasn't been the case so far. I'm hopeful that maybe that changes as, like, he becomes more trusting of his teammates and he doesn't have to do as much on offense, but I wouldn't hold my breath on it. And I know it gets really frustrating because of, like, the quotes he gives where he sounds frustrated at the defense. And, like, yes, it's hypocritical, but, I mean, I kind of just expected it. So it's not – I guess it's not a huge issue to me because I knew it was going to happen, but I understand why people are frustrated about it.
Yeah, I mean, to be, again, quite frank, anybody who expected anything different from LeBron wasn't really paying attention to his defense last year. I will say it is frustrating, like you said, some of the quotes he gives about running out of patience really the last game against the Timberwolves was the first time I was kind of like, listen, you're part of the problem too right now. Yeah. That being said, he's LeBron and he put up 29-6-5 tonight. I guess the optimistic viewpoint you kind of mentioned, maybe he's just so ingrained from last year of taking possessions off defensively because he thinks he has to, and to carry the offense, that maybe he'll realize at some point, I don't have to do this. I can exert a little more energy defensively because the offense isn't reliant on him. Mm-hmm. But like I said, that's a very optimistic viewpoint. I don't know how much his defense is going to change. We'll see. Just from an overall just kind of cohesion standpoint, the team's defense will get better.
Yeah.
But kind of some of the individual stuff, I don't know. And some of the bigger games against the Warriors and stuff like that, we might see just a more concerted effort just because you kind of get up for those bigger games. But your Wednesday night games against the Mavericks, I don't think you're going to see much different of a defensive effort than we saw tonight. The only couple other notes here I had, the Lakers, I should have looked this up beforehand, they outshot an opponent at the free throw line tonight.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that that's happened all year. Even then was a frustrating night from the refs because it didn't feel like there was a whole lot of consistency to the calls. Mm-hmm. But still, it's nice to see them finally on the right side of the free throw margin tonight now to make them, like we mentioned.
Yeah.
Three-point shooting. The Lakers started out on fire. It seemed like everything they shot really in that first quarter and the first half went in. They finished the night, I believe, 10 of 17, 58%. Even we mentioned before, even that small of a volume, I think, might even be enough. But they started the game 7 of 11. So I guess, what do you think of the three-point shooting tonight, honey?
I think that's, you mentioned it. The biggest thing is just the volume. Like, in the year of our Lord, 2018, you should not be taking just 17 three-pointers in a game. The Mavericks, for example, shot 29 of them. And they shot it worse than the Lakers. They shot 13 of 29. But that's basically like, you know, 9 extra points that they got from the three-point line. And to me, like, the biggest culprit is Brandon Ingram. He attempted 1-3 today from the corner and he made it, but he takes a lot of mid-range jumpers, and you know, he's pretty good at it. He uses his length and all of that, but at the end of the day, he's got to take a few of those and turn them into three-pointers, because it's just a more efficient shot. Like, everything that we've been told, and it makes sense, it's worth more points. You're expected to score more points every time you hoist a three-pointer over a mid-range shot. I think by virtue of them playing so fast and playing in transition, they're not going to shoot as many threes as most teams, because they're getting to the rim more often, and that's fine. That's a great shot to take. But in the half court, they should be generating more looks at the three-point line, which it's been kind of inconsistent. Some games they've done really well in that, and some games they haven't. And the Mavs, I think, came into the game as the worst three-point defending team in the league, which obviously is kind of a fluky stat sometimes, but you know, you got to be able to exploit that a little bit more than they did.
That figure, the 10 of 17 also includes Rajon Rondo, of all people, shooting 3.
From like 35 feet out?
Yeah. Well, the one, yeah, he buries from forever away, which is the second time this year he's taken at least 3 threes. Literally would rather anybody else on the team shoot threes than him. I'd rather JaVale shoot threes over him. But yeah, that the volume certainly has to go up, but if they can hover around, I think tonight's probably as close to the bare minimum as you can expect in a winning effort. To go 10 of 17, like you said, 17 threes in 2018 is crazy low, but this team is a weird team. It's not really like any team we've seen before. If you had to guess, what is Rajon Rondo shooting from three this season?
I was thinking of looking it up. I'm gonna say like 36%. I feel like it's high. Is it low?
Did you say 36?
Yeah.
On 2.6 attempts per game, he is shooting 46.2% from three.
Okay, I knew it was high, but I didn't think it was that.
Definitely sustainable.
Okay, but JaVale is shooting 50% from three, so you're right. They should give all his three-pointers to JaVale.
Listen, I'm for it. Let's see how far this JaVale train can take us. He's already outplaying us entirely, or outplaying expectations entirely, so let's go for it. I'm down. As we mentioned, the Lakers next in action against the Blazers on Saturday. I believe at Portland. Saturday, 7 Pacific. Pawnee, what's one thing you're kind of looking for from that game?
I'm looking forward to making either you or Gary tweet it, because it's a game in Portland and the Lakers will never win there for the rest of my life.
Oh, let me check my schedule. Oh, I got something to do that night. Crazy how that works.
I'm just hoping to see if they can bounce back from that first game. It was kind of similar to this one in a way, where they were in it the entire game, but kind of fell apart towards the end. And I want to see specifically how they guard the Blazers, the three-point line, especially with Lillard and McCollum, and notorious Lakers killer and apparently best shooter in the world, Nick Stauskas.
He's no J.J. Barea, but he might be the next in line.
He's carrying the torch. Yeah, so I think guarding the three-point line is going to be huge, and hopefully, like we mentioned, they're going to be shooting a few more and making that a more even battle.
For me, it's something we talked about. I'll be interested to see. I assume at this point the starting lineup is going to definitely see that game, if not a hand or the foreseeable future. I want to see how that backcourt does against Dame and McCollum, defensively, that is. Mm-hmm. It's a minor step up from a rookie and a sophomore in Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. But I'm just kind of interested to see how they match up because, like I said, it's an unorthodox fit offensively, especially with Ingram still kind of reluctant to shoot. But it should be good defensively. So it's more natural matching up. There's not as much cross-matching. I think Ingram and Ball would be the two that would start on those guys, regardless of who else would be in the lineup. So I'll be interested to see. And it also helps LeBron go on whoever the third option is. Mo Harkless probably. It kind of helps create some of the – or a little more natural, like I said, a little less cross-matching. So I'm mainly interested to see how Ingram and Zoe do defensively. But like I said, that'll be on Saturday. We should be back on Saturday with another post-game podcast, hopefully talking about a win. But as Hani said, we never win in Portland. So congrats on getting to tweet another game from the account
on Saturday. We'll give it to Dylan.
Good call. Rookie initiation. I'm looking forward to see just how different it is from opening night. See if the Lakers can hang around and hopefully get a win this time. They really need to start winning some of these games against teams they're going to be fighting for playoff seeds with. So that would be a big one like the Denver one was. Like I said at the beginning, if you haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave a review with what you think our forfeit should be that Hani will probably have to do. If you haven't already, follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Go check out the website. We redesigned it heading into this season. It looks great. Plenty of things to kind of look around, discover on the site, on top of any of the new articles we have. So it's a fun time to be a Laker fan, even after that heart attack-inducing finish to tonight's game. So we will be back on Saturday. We hope to see you guys with us. For Hani, this is Jacob signing off. Have a great night, everyone.